Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, here it is Tuesday, and apparently the Pig Lincoln Party can still not afford an atlas. They sell them all over the place. World Atlas. It's easy. But they can't find one. I'm probably full of, you know, not patriotic enough, because every page isn't the new United States of America. They got foreign countries in them world atlases, and we can't be a-looking at them. No siree. No. Can't be looking at atlases. Atlases are dangerous. They're full of foreigners speaking the foreign languages that Obama wants us all to teach our children. Oh, have them speaking illegal alien like Georgie Gordon Liddy done talked about last week. Yes. Golly, we need to buy an atlas for the Repig Lickin' Party campaign. You know how Loretta Knoll got people to send in sex toys to Alabama Attorney General Troy King? We need to send world atlases to the Repiglican Party. Why? Because for the second day in a row, John McCain said that he was very concerned about goings on in a country that doesn't exist.
And I regret some of the recent behavior that Russia has exhibited, and I'll be glad to talk about that later on, including reduction in oil supplies to Czechoslovakia after they agreed with us on a missile defense system, etc. But
no, really, that was today in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I knew I should have taken that left plane at Albuquerque. Huh? 4 times in 1 year, and John McCain is still making up countries that don't exist. My friends, I want you to know that we are setting up a strategic partnership with Czechoslovakia, and it's going to be a strategic partnership that only I can see. It's kind of like that big rabbit in that Jimmy Stewart movie. He was a hep cat, that Jimmy Stewart. You've seen Harvey, haven't you? Oh, that Jesse White just makes me chortle with laughter. He was a real card. Yeah, you heard it there. Including reduction in oil supplies to Czechoslovakia when they agreed with us on a missile defense system. Really? This is going to come as quite a surprise. To the Russians? To the Czech Republic? To the Slovaks? To the makers of, you know, world atlases. Lord God, do we have to start a count? Really, do we have to start a countdown now? The pool is open, everyone. The pool is open. How long will it be? I mentioned this last night, but how long will it be before John McCain mentions Siam?
I give it, it's my pool. I got 8 days. I got 8 days. I've got, by the 23rd, by the 23rd of July, John McCain will have referred to Siam. Or the Holy Roman Empire. Or the Spanish colony of New Spain. Or the Dutch colony of New Amsterdam. Any of those. What, 2 days in a row? I mean, don't his own campaign goobers read the inner tubes? But then again, there's that sort of pasty-faced, doughy white crowd that's watching him. As he says Czechoslovakia and, oh. Reduction in oil supplies to Czechoslovakia. And, of course, the Johnny-on-the-spot for-profit media press corps that's following him there on the Straight Talk airplane that his wife owns or something. They can't be bothered. John, buddy, you know, we're all pals here. You know, we write fluff about you. We never say, I mean, it's home on the range anytime we report on you. Never is heard a discouraging word. And John McCain's not an idiot all day. John, we never tell the truth about you. But you gotta stop saying Czechoslovakia, cause, I mean, we're for-profit media reporters and even we know there's no Czechoslovakia, John! I mean, work with us a little bit here. Meet us halfway. You say Czech and we'll sneeze or something. But there's no Czechoslovakia, John. To which he replies, shut up, you C-word! So, you know, at least we got a giggle to say. No, somebody will send me an email telling me there's nothing funny about John McCain not knowing where the countries are on the map, and I agree. But I'm stunned with this. I'm stunned. 2 days in a row of Czechoslovakia, 4 times in 10 months. 4 times in the last year at the very least. Come on, come on. At some point he has to start saying Czech Republic, doesn't he? Yeah, and by the way, Orange County, Florida. Orange County, Florida. I don't know if our buddy Juanita lives down there, and Peter Godbold lives down there, and Guy James lives down there, and we've got a lot of Florida listeners. And sometimes I've got to just ask, are there days when you just are afraid to go out the door? If you were in Orange County, it would be hard to go. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm talking about a photograph. There's a billboard in Orange County, Florida. A big old billboard. Billboard-sized. What's it say in great big letters? Please don't vote for a Democrat. And it shows a photograph of the smoking Twin Towers superimposed over a waving American flag. Please don't vote for a Democrat. Now, you're you and I'm me, and I don't have to explain that the Twin Towers came down on George Bush's watch and that he wasn't a Democrat then and just became a Republican later. I don't have to explain that. But come on, Orange County, Florida? How many people? How many? Marlene, I think they're right, whoever put up that billboard. Let's not vote for any Democrats because, you know, it was 19 Democrats on those airliners that flew into our trade towers. You're right, Emery. You're absolutely right. We're voting for Republicans, so Democrats can't hurt us ever again when they use planes as missiles. Now, here's the punchline to all of this. This whole billboard thing is a hustle. The guy who paid to have it put up is an Orange County, Florida musician. And he's hustling. There's a website underneath it. I'm not going to tell you what the website is. But he's hustling his website as a way to get people. Oh, God. You hear that? I'm going there so you don't have to. The guy who put up the billboard is named Mike Meehan. And he's photographed wearing a shirt made out of the American flag, a black hat with a red underbrim, blue jeans, and a jacket, leaning against a rusty old pickup truck, and the headstock is in view of what is either, well, it's probably a Strat, or more likely a Strat knockoff. You want to hear the song that he's hustling? Yeah. Please don't vote for a Democrat, and you go to a web page that says, to hire Mike Meehan to perform the Republican song and more live at your concert, party, meeting, or event, please contact him for a reservation. Don't you love Repig Lickens, folks? Always willing to haul out the smoking rubble, the bloody shirt, and wave it about in a desperate attempt to make a fast buck. God, it's inspiring. I wonder if this is going to be as much fun as, say, God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood. I don't know. Let's find out. Wait a minute. He must be getting too many hits. Darn thing won't load. Enjoy the song and the website. God bless Mike Meehan. The name of his song is Please Don't Vote for a Democrat. He says, the song was written, played, sung, produced, and recorded by myself.
And I did it all myself. I did it by myself.
I claim to be a man of God, and like millions of others, I love this great nation, the United States of America. And he puts the United States of America, friends and neighbors, in quotes. The United States of America is in quotes.
Yeah.
As if we're like, you know, leprechauns or elves or hobbits. The United States of America. You know. And apparently a lot of people are hitting this thing to see it. Okay, let's try it. Yeah. He's completely crashed. This showed up on a liberal democratic website, and people are hitting him like crazy. If you want to write to this freak, though, his email address is pleasedontvoteforaddemocrat@yahoo.com. Ah, here we go. See, even when I can't do it, somebody else can. Bless your heart, ELO, for finding this. Here, yeah. Oh, okay. This is what I had a minute ago. It doesn't seem to be loading. Or maybe it is, or... Here we go. Ah, yeah. That's the sound of a tractor. And that's a guy on a tractor. I guess that's our boy, Mike Meehan, wearing his cap backwards. And it's a 24 NASCAR hat. And he's stopped his tractor by the American flag, and he's looking at it reverentially with his hat turned back around the right way now.
The Democrat secular progressive move. Political correctness is killing us too. They want to take the money from the hard-working man and give it to the lazy folks and don't give a damn. Democrats and liberals, shame on you. Don't punish us all, just if there's a few. You're holding people back while we're picking up the slack, and that's why we can't vote for a Democrat. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 Democrat.
Yeah, it sounds like he played it himself. You know what? John Fox can play better guitar than that. Stone drunk. With a bandana tied around his eyes. And band-aids on his fingers. Oh, my God. Well, there. Shame on me. There's that little jerk-off's the 15 minutes of fame. And what was that line again here? I just we got it just for a minute.
That secular progressive move, political correctness is killing us too. They want to take the money from the hard-working man and give it to the lazy folks and don't give a damn.
Now hold on just a conflab nastin' carn frackin' minute. They want to take the money from the hard-working man and give it to the lazy folk who don't give a damn. I'm sorry, that seems to... Isn't that what's been going on for the last 7.5 years? We took money from the middle class and the lower class and gave it to a bunch of lazy CEOs and electron pushers in the investment banks? I mean, I didn't get into it yesterday or anything, but there was this whole bailout for Freddie and Fannie Mac thing, may God bless America, going on. You know, where the profit margin is privatized and the loss side, as Paul Krugman noted, is socialized. So Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are going in the toilet, and you and me, we're on the hook for it. The profits, however, the profits we don't see. No. So, you know, I like the theme. Taking the money from the hard-working man and giving it to the lazy people who don't give a damn. The only thing is, Republicans have been doing that, not Democrats. I mean, I, as a Democrat, I got a lot of problems with the Democratic Party. I got problems with the absence of spine in the Democratic Party. But Mike Meehan can't exactly claim the moral high ground on this. ELO says, who's the effing genius who wrote these lyrics? Why, Mike Meehan did it. Didn't you hear? He done it all by himself. Because, as he says, I claim to be a man of God. Dr. Freud, emergencies. Please see the man wearing the red, white, and blue American flag desecrating shirt. I claim to be a man of God, because he isn't a man of God. And like millions of others, I love this great nation, the United States of America. Enjoy your 15 minutes, Mike. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Vince?
Not much, just I still can't get into the chat room.
Nope.
I'm so sad.
I'm sad for you. We will work on that.
I don't think it's you guys, because obviously I'm seeing the indicator saying a bunch of people are in the chat room, so it's got to be something with me. I don't know.
Well, I promise, though, we haven't banned you.
Well, I don't know what it is. I got this new computer, and I usually use Firefox as my main browser.
Do you have Java loaded?
Yeah, Java is loaded. And the problem is that when I try and load it in Internet Explorer, it tells me that Windows has prevented a software from running onto your computer. This is for your protection. I can't find any stupid thing to turn it off. Maybe somebody who's a little techier than me can give me some ideas.
Are you running XP or Vista?
XP.
Go to Control Panel, go to Security Settings.
Uh-huh, been there, done that.
Oh, okay, well, never mind then. We're past the limit of my expertise.
I have already told it to run ActiveX controls. I told it not to check for the digital signature. I've done everything I know how to do. That's not really what I called about.
Okay, well, I'll take you at your word then.
You got to quit. No more listening to this guy for you. He's going to, like, cause your blood pressure to go over, you know, 8 million.
Nah, you know, this is a good thing for me. Because with Mr. Meehan out there, Mr. Mike Meehan, I call myself a man of God. With him out there, it's a little, you know, I'm feeling a little better about things. Help me, because to the same extent that John McCain has some geography problems, I do too. Where is Orange County, Florida?
Orange County, Florida, is, which actually, believe it or not, I've moved near there. I live in Florida now. I just finished my move. I'm talking to you from my new place. But Orange County, Florida is located, it's basically where Orlando, Florida is. Orlando is located in Orange County.
Oh, dear God. So he's in. So there's all kinds of people going to come see that great symbol of Christianity,
oh, yeah.
Mickey Mouse, and they're
going
to get told, please don't vote for a Democrat. And they're going to see a picture of the smoke and rubble in front of a waving American flag, and they're going to understand that Barack Obama bombed the towers.
Yep. It's right in the middle. Yeah, Disney World, Islands of Adventure, SeaWorld, basically everybody who comes to Florida for most of the touristy, you know, spend $1 million and don't go to the beach kind of thing, that's what they're going to see. I hate to say it.
Well, why would you want to go to Europe when you can go to Disney World and see it and they're still speaking English?
I don't know.
I know.
It's
a puzzlement.
I left Georgia, and I was like, well, I don't have to deal with these people much longer. Get down here, and I'm like, oh, my God, never mind. I can't escape them. Oh,
I know. But
I've been out of the loop for a couple of days with no net access or anything. McCain doesn't understand that the Soviet bloc is gone, and, you know, countries have split, and it's not the 1970s, early 80s anymore.
It's not even the, no, I think he's still in the late 50s, early 60s. That's when he quit paying attention.
Oh, this is just brilliant.
But that's okay, because he's out there today, Vince, with a brand, he says he knows how to win wars. No kidding, this is the quote. My friends, I know how to win wars, and if I'm elected president, I will turn around the war.
More of them.
I'll start one till I find one I can win.
Oh, God, please tell me these people.
You people in the Lesser Antilles are in real trouble. Wait a minute. My friends, Costa Rica doesn't have an army, and that's what they're doing. That's how they're trying to fool us.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know how to win wars, and if I'm elected president, I'll turn around the war in Afghanistan just as we've turned around the war in Iraq with a comprehensive strategy for victory.
Uh-huh. So what is that strategy, sir? Would be my immediate follow-up question. What is that strategy?
That's where the Star Trek computer kicks in and says, working, waiting.
I hate to say it. Our party is just as guilty of it. You know, these big, vague statements. Well, hey, okay, so you're going to fix the economy. Okay, so you're going to stop the war. Okay, so you're going to... How? No one can answer that question.
Well, see, I've got a little bit of a problem, though, because on the one hand, McCain started all this. My friend Senator Obama will tell you, my friends, we can't win in Afghanistan without losing in Iraq. In fact, he has it exactly backwards. It's precisely the It's the success of the surge in Iraq that shows us the way to succeed in Afghanistan. You know, let the screaming commence. But I got a problem on the other side of the coin too, and maybe this makes me a far leftist, because Senator Obama then said in a speech in Washington that the U.S. has to end the war in Iraq so that Afghanistan, quote, is a war that we have to win. So we need to have a little chat about Afghanistan and Iraq, because they're not wars, they're occupations, and they're not particularly successful ones.
I was going to say, we're great at winning wars. For crying out loud, the whole thing in Iraq was done in, like, what, a week?
Yep, we won, scheduled the parade, we're all coming home. Yeah, I know.
Wars are waged by definition. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, but wars are waged by definition between two nations, and generally their military forces, whatever those are. Now, the government that we were attacking in the war against, the wars against both Afghanistan and Iraq, they don't exist anymore. Therefore, that war by de facto does not exist anymore. That war has been done.
Right, we win, come home.
A week after we started. But it's not, everybody thinks it's a we win, come home kind of thing. I mean, it's not. But we're not, I don't know, we haven't been good at the cleanup end of it since World War II. But of course, that's because at the end of World War II, We knew, okay, we're done. We're done bombing you now. Now we're going to help you rebuild. No, now instead we just throw a bunch of people in there, the rape, pillage, and plunder, everything that they can find, and then they wonder why the hell the people get pissed off and start a guerrilla war against us. Hey, guess what? That's what we did with the British.
You know what? I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but we're actually on a track to get our asses thrown out of Afghanistan quicker than the Soviets did.
Oh, how so? Again, I've been out of the loop lately.
Well, we to the extent that Afghanistan needed to be won, whatever the hell win means, we watered it all down by sending troops to Iraq, so that screwed that up. And you know the big attack that took place over the weekend that killed 9 American soldiers and maimed 15 others?
No, I've been out of the
loop. Oh, that's right. You've been out of the loop. Well, it was the most horrific attack in a couple of years in Afghanistan. 9 Americans killed, 15 maimed, so that's 15, 24, that's 24 American families' lives shattered irretrievably in some way or another.
More than that when you count the friends and family and extended.
Right.
And
well, it turns out there's, you know, it's not anything that anybody's making a lot of noise about because it doesn't work real well with the Republicans will keep you safe argument. But the Taliban fighters who did that, Vince, they actually penetrated the base. They penetrated the camp. They weren't just lobbing mortars in and randomly hurting people.
And I mean, and you know what pisses me off most about this, Bob? And I might take a beating over this. I disagreed with the manner in which it was done, but I fully believe that the Taliban needed to be dealt with because they were harboring Osama bin Laden. That's a fact. We can't really argue that point.
They were harboring him, but they didn't have much control over him.
Well, I know, but the simple fact of the matter is we should give them up. They said no, and
wait, please.
Go ahead.
Can we? I mean, I'm not arguing with you, but that's not quite how it went down.
Okay, well then.
We said give him up. The Taliban said we will be happy to ship him to The Hague. And we said, not good enough. Here come the bombs.
Well,
there's a little shade of difference there. Wouldn't you agree?
Shade of difference. I do agree that maybe we should have maybe not dropped bombs on them if they were going to ship them to The Hague. But, I mean, oh, God,
now, this is not to say that the Taliban were not jerks. Anybody who gets their maiden forms in a twist and goes out and blows up 1,500-year-old statues to prove how much you love God, you know, fundamentalist. Not real bright.
And I mean, let's face it, you know, my dad is quite fond of calling, you know, the Bush administration and the right-wing movement in general the American Taliban. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're cut from the same cloth. And that being said, if we had, let's say, for instance, we had a Christian fundamentalist movement that went and maybe knocked down a couple of towers in Dubai or something, and that government said, hey, you know, hand them over to us or else, and we said, well, you know, no, or we'll ship them to The Hague or whatever, I could understand, if not agree, the point of view of, okay, well, we're just going to bomb the crap out of you if they were able to. I could understand it. The simple fact of the matter is that, though, if our mission was to eradicate the Taliban as the functional government of Afghanistan, then we should have done that, and we were in the process of doing that, and then we lost focus because Bush wanted to go, you know, I don't know, avenge his father or something. I don't know what that
is. He tried to kill my daddy. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, I don't think either war was necessarily right. You know, but if we're going to say one was it, even if we're even going to go ahead and, you know, say, well, look, maybe one may have been somewhat justifiable, we still managed to screw it up. We go in there, we say, you know, hey, we're going to do this, and then before we finish what we do there, we go off. And now what's happening? The Taliban is coming back. And no one mentions this. Hello? The whole reason the Taliban has even had the whole ability to start coming back and break into our bases and start killing our guys again is because you've been paying too much attention in a war in a country where it wasn't even involved with any of this. Oh!
And the billboard in Florida with the flag and the smoking towers and please don't vote for a Democrat.
Because what these idiots don't realize is that, you know, hey, guess what? we went after these people. You know, let's not even get into the argument that, you know, if we're going to say that the rationale was, is, you know, we took the Taliban out so that they wouldn't support somebody else or allow somebody else to use their base as a country again to do that. Well, now we've completely screwed that up by the war in Iraq. Now they're coming back more pissed off than ever. Now probably a heck of a lot more likely to not only allow but encourage somebody to come set up shop in their area, which makes America less safe down the line, which simply makes us more susceptible to attack. And these brain dead morons
yeah, I know,
just don't understand this. I mean, I understand this and you understand this and everybody listening to this program understands this, but the, you know, Joe Blow on the street, the average Walmart listener, the average Walmart shopping, Fox News watching, Rush Limbaugh listening, Joe Blow truck driving schmo, just as long as they don't take my guns and the homosexuals can't get married. Yep. On day three, God said that there was the Second Amendment and I had my gun. And now I think I'm going to go shoot me a homo.
Yep. Here you go. I've got that one for you. Wait a minute. This is how it actually, here's how it actually reads, Vince.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals. Amen.
That's the one.
I was referencing, I was kind of hybriding two quotes. I've got a picture on my computer that has a picture of a guy sitting in front of it. He's like, something about a shotgun. He goes, I'm going to go shoot me something, maybe a queer. I'll find that and send it to you.
I was talking to a lawyer buddy of mine today, and the you know, lawyers love to tell their war stories and stuff, and he was telling me about his client that he tried to acquit, but the guy was, well,
unacquittable?
Well, he was unacquittable. Because he wouldn't follow directions, and he had this penchant for going out and punching gay people.
May I interrupt you there?
Yeah.
Didn't seem to be a problem with the guy who shot the Mexicans in Texas.
No, not a problem.
Sorry, just had to put that on there. Go ahead.
No, but that this particular guy was real proud of the fact that he sucker punches gay people.
If he'd have been in Texas, he'd probably been all right.
Well, if he'd been, they'd probably welcomed him with open arms at a church or something. Vince, I got a warning here from the American Family Association.
Oh God.
Yeah, it's terribly distressing. Apparently, Barnes and Noble, the American Family Association, is warning people that Barnes and Noble is a dangerous place for your cheerings.
Uh-huh, why is that?
Because in Collierville, Tennessee, an 11-year-old boy named Landon House, he was a-walking through the Barnes & Noble bookstore, mm-hmm. and he seen a book lying open, Vince. He seen the book lying open on one of the reading area tables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now bear in mind, the details matter in this. It was in the reading area. It's where folks pick a book off the shelf and go and read it a little bit to see if they want it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't displayed as, you know, hey, come here, buy this. No. The kid was nosing around somewhere that he had no business. And he was, it was open on one of the reading area tables. And his daddy, Brandon House, was right behind him. And what Landon seen was graphic pictures of two men engaged in sex. Yes. Name of the book was Ultimate Gay Sex. And it turns out it's one of the many sexually explicit books that are offered in Barnes & Noble stores. See, these people have finally jumped the shark. You know, we've known that they were book burners all along, and now they've proven it.
Well, hey, for crying out loud, they'd hate to see the section I usually frequent when I go to the local Books Million around here. You'll always see me in the New Age spirituality section being, you know, Wiccan and all.
Pagan? You pagan?
Sorry.
Heathen, what's wrong with you? Don't you... Well...
Shame. Don't you believe it? My wife gets that from her mother all the time. Don't you? And she doesn't even know that, you know, we keep this very, I told you about my crazy Southern Baptist in-laws.
Yes.
And one of the reasons me and my wife started dating was because when we met at work and she saw a pentagram that I was wearing. and we started talking about it, and my wife had a couple years earlier been exposed and was kind of researching, and she hadn't quite decided, you know, that's what I want to do, but, you know, she was limited in what she could do because, God forbid, you know, she brings something home, her parents see it, you know, they burn her at the stake or something. So, you know, she was like, you know, well, I'm kind of thinking about it, and I'm, you know, it makes more sense to me than, you know, from what I've read and whatnot. And we started talking about that, and, you know, that was basically the beginning of a very nice relationship there. But, I mean, you know.
Well, we'll pray for you. I'll send up a prayer request to the Merck and Family Association for you, Vince.
But, I mean, seriously, everybody in our friends group knows, and, you know, everybody, you know, but, you know, her family is kind of isolated because her family doesn't deal with any of, you know, the groups that we deal with. So they're isolated. They, to my knowledge, now, of course, maybe they're not as introverted or unobservant as I'm giving them credit for, but to my knowledge, they do not know. But they are frequently, you know, when my wife has to go to work with one of them, which she no longer has to do, again, because we just moved south, frequently my mother-in-law would sit her down in the car on the ride home. When she's in the car and in the front seat and she can't get out and walk away and say, I don't want to talk about this, or, don't you know Jesus Christ died for your sins? You believe in Jesus, right? Yeah, Mom.
Right.
And she'll start trying to make the discussion. And of course, if Haley doesn't display the right attitude or, you know, whatever, it just turns into a whole full-blown deal. I mean, God, I just hate these people.
Yeah, gotta go. I hear my dog calling me.
But she can't do that because they're doing it while they're on a ride home. It's going to take about 30, 35 minutes.
Oh, that's like kidnapping. It really is. When you subject somebody to something that they can't get away from, well, we're doing it, but we're doing it for Jesus.
Well, it's like my favorite response I had, actually, the other day. I was walking, I can walk everywhere now. I've never lived in a city before. And now I live in, I live in Orange Park, Florida, which is a suburb of Jacksonville, is mm-hmm. where I live now.
Yeah.
And I've never lived in a big city before. And I'm just now getting used to the concept that I can walk anywhere. I mean, I could walk anywhere in Kings, you know, where I lived in Georgia, but I had, you know, I had to walk like, long ways.
Right.
I mean, there's like a Starbucks across the street from where I am now. So I'm walking to the grocery store because I'm thinking, you know, hey, I just had to pick up a few things. It's only 10 minutes away. Why burn the gas and I'll get some exercise. So I'm walking out there and this guy with a Bible on the side of the street comes up and goes, have you found Jesus? And you know what I said right off the bat?
I didn't know he was lost.
No, I look at him and I go, oh, my God, have you people lost him again?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Did you get the look?
Yeah, he just kind of looked at me kind of funny for a second. And I just went, if you guys lose it, I'm getting tired of having to find this guy for you. I mean, you guys need to lock him in a box or a church or something. You guys got to know where he is. I mean, he's like a puppy or something. Every time you turn around, at this point, he just turns around and walks off.
Yeah, I'd use electric fencing. Solar powered.
Solar powered electric fencing. Yeah.
That'll show that Jesus.
Well, Bob, I'm sure you've got other blinkies. Can I give you an email address real quick just to disseminate against the listeners in the chat room?
Yeah, sure. Oh, by the way, there was a message. I have to find it real quick. Just give me a second.
Okay, while you're doing that.
Oh yeah. Oh, I know. It's had something to do with your fishing filter.
My fishing filter.
Yes.
Okay, I'll try that, but I think I turned that off. But if anyone else has any other ideas, my temporary email address, because I don't have my new one set up yet, is VM Victor Michael NOVAK @gmail.com. And if anyone has any other ideas on what I can try to get in the chat room, I'm suffering from withdrawal here.
Okay. Well, and you are missed. VM Novak, NOVAK @gmail.com.
That is correct.
I have a feeling you'll get fan mail.
I hope so. Well, I don't want fan mail. I want a solution. But, Bob, always a pleasure talking to you. I'm sure you've got other.
Hey, enjoy life and civilization there. And
oh, God. Given some of the people I've run into, I'm getting ready to run back to Georgia. At least then I could hide in a hole somewhere out in the wilderness and get away from folks.
Be careful what you wish for. You were talking a couple of weeks ago about moving down there. Now you're there, and You can't say you weren't warned, Vince.
Oh, I know, but I don't know. We'll see. I'll give you status reports as I go.
All right. You take care.
All right. I'll call in later, Bob. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, it's a joy. Talk to you soon, Vince.
Talk to you soon, Bob.
Bye now. Formerly of South Georgia, now of North Florida, our buddy Vince. And here, let's stay on theme here. We started out with John McCain. John McCain, the sensitivity. Yes, the sensitivity of a compassionate conservative. It will be Bush administration part trois. A reminder of the place that John McCain comes from. A 1986 Tucson Citizen article. Yes, I realize it's 1986 and people change, but nah, they don't change like this. Yeah, it was 22 years ago, but it still matters. Lord God, the right wing is concerned with the kindergarten behavior of Barack Obama. Surely to God we can bring up a 22-year-old piece of miserable, insensitive hatred from John McCain. 1986 Tucson Citizen article that tells the story of a joke that Senator John McCain told then. He was talking to the National League of Cities and Towns at their meeting in Washington. And he said, "My friends, did you hear the one about the woman who was attacked on the street by a gorilla, beaten senseless, raped repeatedly, and left to die? Oh, when she finally regains consciousness and tries to speak, her doctor leans over to hear her sigh contentedly and to feebly ask, 'Where is that marvelous ape?'" Yeah. And, of course, McCain says he can't remember telling the joke. He probably told the joke a week and a half ago. You know how it is with guys who aren't particularly funny. They learn one joke and they tell it over and over and over again till people stop inviting them to Christmas parties and so forth, unless, of course, they're United States senators. "Where is that marvelous ape?" And you know that John McCain's the kind that laughs at his own jokes. You just know it. Now me, I love the story of the postman who knocks, the guy who knocks on the door. It's the postman. It's Christmas time, and the lovely wife answers the door, and she invites the postman in. She gets her mail. She says, "Would you like a little breakfast?" Postman says, "Sure." So he sits down at the table, and she brings him a nice breakfast, bacon, eggs, biscuits, grits, all the trimmings, pancakes, butter. And he enjoys a wonderful breakfast. And then she, while he's eating his breakfast, she goes away, and all of a sudden she comes down the stairs wearing the beautiful negligee, and she says, "Hey, you want to come upstairs and get it on?" He says, "Sure." So they do. And then as she's about to let him out, she hands him a $10 bill. And at this point, the poor postman is completely flummoxed. And he finally just has to answer. He says, "Lady, this has all been great, but what gives?" She said, "Well, this morning when my husband was leaving for work, I said, 'Honey, it's almost Christmas. What are we going to do? What are we going to do for the postman?' He says, 'Screw him. Give him $10. Breakfast was my idea.'" See, that's a joke. Or the guy who was hiring out hiring timber cutters. And he goes through this long line of burly men. He finally comes to this little bitty scrawny guy. He says, "What are you doing in this line? You don't even belong here. I got to have guys who can go from sunup to sundown cutting down trees. What have you ever done? You know, where have you ever been a lumberjack?" And the little guy says, "Well, I worked in the Sahara Forest. guy goes, you mean the Sahara Desert? Little guy looks at him and goes, well, that's what they call it now. Did you hear the one about the woman who was attacked on the street by a gorilla, beaten senseless, raped repeatedly, and left to die? That's some funny. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's funny. No. And, of course, John McCain runs around with people who get a kick out of this kind of stuff. The Texas oil man who said, you know what? Texas oil man, he was going to have a fundraiser with McCain. They kind of had to postpone the event after it all came out because it turns out the Texas oil man, he too had one joke. He'd stand up to the podium and say, hey, y'all, you know what rape and the weather have in common? As long as it's inevitable, you might as well lie back and enjoy it. Ho, 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 ho. I don't care who you are. That's funny. No, it ain't. This is what passes for a serious candidate for the presidency of the United States. And it's mighty tough to stomach. It is mighty tough to stomach. But let's not assume that I'm just the off on John McCain. Because really and for truly, this business about, yeah, I know how to win a war. Barack Obama says we can't win in Afghanistan without losing in Iraq, and he has it exactly backwards. So Obama says that we have to end the war in Iraq so that we can win in Afghanistan. And really, I'd like to sit down with the both of them and say, gentlemen, you're both just crazier than a sprayed roach. These are both wars that we started. These are both invasions that we mounted. These have both transformed into occupations that we created. We are not there at the sufferance or the goodwill of the people of either of these countries. They want us gone. And with all of that as prologue, it follows that we cannot win in either one of them. Why do we persist in talking about Iraq and Afghanistan, again, as if it was some sort of football game? These are people's lives. 24 families in one day from Afghanistan shattered, forever transformed. Because, well, we're not, because we can't win a war, with very few exceptions, and one was pointed out to me, the Russo-Japanese War, the early part of the 20th century. With very few exceptions, you cannot start wars and expect to win them. This attack from last weekend at the American outpost, it was, by the way, near the Pakistani border, there were 200 Taliban soldiers in that. They outnumbered the American contingent almost 3-1. The attack was very well coordinated, and yes, they breached the compound. It took 4 hours to drive them back. The Post, the New York Times reporting says that the base and a nearby observation post were held by only 45 American soldiers and 25 Afghan soldiers. 9 dead Americans, 15 maimed and wounded. They got 1 out of 5. They got 20%. Any, and I do mean any, through history, any home force that can, at a pop, inflict 20% casualties We'll take numbers like that every day and call it a win, no matter how many of theirs go down. The base was only about a week old. The defenses weren't fully in place. And troops had to use their vehicles as barricades against the local fighters. And they breached the defenses. This is, Senator Obama, with all due respect, as long as you're talking about winning in Afghanistan militarily, you're talking about a fool's errand. We cannot do that. Because this is not the sort of thing that can be defined by victory. Like Vince noted, it's not like the end of World War II. There's no battleship. There's nobody in a morning coat or a frock coat or hand-tied ties and top hats coming up to sign the documents of surrender. There's no train. There's no railway car on a siding. There's no one to surrender. But that's okay. John McCain says, my friends, I know how to win wars. Step one, crash five jets. Now, step one would be finish 894th out of 899 in your graduating class at Annapolis, where you got in only as a legacy. Which reminds me, speaking of legacies, our buddy Scott in Stockholm. God, I love the idea of global radio, don't you? Our buddy Scott in Stockholm wrote in and said, Bob, you mentioned yesterday how legacy brat, screwed up America, how McCain, legacy brat, crashed multiple aircraft and is pending the screw-up of America, and how young what's-his-name, numbnut junior legacy, August A. Bush IV, abdicated the king of swill, Budweiser. Scott says, you know, there's a pattern here. Speaking of royalty, legacy, and gutting great-great-granddaddy's gratuitous grubstake, here in Europe, our history is positively blood-dripping replete with capable, if ruthless, literal bastards taking over a realm and seeing their royal rugrats fumble it away in spasms of incumbent incubated incompetence. Lord, I could go months and never come up with incumbent incubated incompetence. You guys are good. And in America, this royalty are the Bushes, with the C between the S and the H, the Bushes with no C between the S and the H, and the other big business big wigs. And like Europe's self-destruction until its royalty was either beheaded or tamed, America's Ivy League legacy losers fumble away America's wealth and standing, even as they stuff their pockets with whatever is left. There can be, Scott says, no better argument for confiscatory taxation than taking a good, hard look at the children of the talented, if ruthless, creators of empires. No country can afford anything as wasteful as these no-talent layabouts retaining anything of Dad's glory except his good name and half his genes. Get them out of the way of the creative doers, lest they pull the house down around all of our ears. I'd never thought about it that way, and it's absolutely true. There is a pattern here, and it's not just dub, and it's not... Every time I say dub, I think of the Darlings from the Andy Griffith Show. This is dub. Wasn't dub played by Bob Denver? Oh, dear God, what happens to my mind? Yeah, he was. And had Ernest T. all busted up. W. McCain, August A. Bush IV, otherwise known as young what's-his-name Numbnut Jr. Yeah, there's a pattern. And it's the weakening of the gene pool. It's the sequel is never as good as the original. And, you know, it's a fair question. We get fed the steady diet of drivel about how, you know, it's America and everybody pulls themselves up by their own bootstraps. But when the rubber hits the road, baby, what are the Republicans interested in? The Republican Party, baby, is interested in eliminating the death tax. Yeah, that's what they like to call it, the death tax. In other words, making sure that Paris Hilton can live the life of a little heiress who never contributes anything to society, herself, anything else, and just fits the bill of a professional. What? What are the Paris Hiltons of the world? What are the heirs? You can't say that August A. Bush IV is a businessman. He's the businessman the way that the captain of the Exxon Valdez was a ship's captain. In other words, a very, very bad one. So, yeah. Why do we do this? Now, on the other hand, if you're the son of a hardworking furnace foreman, laborer, craftsman, there's not so much in the way of a legacy for those working people, is there? But all you got to do is show up and stay alive till the parents get till the parents shuffle off, and then you're just rich forever. And the United States can't seem to bring itself to actually ask, you know, our betters to work as hard as the working people in this country who do find a way, so many different ways, to succeed. Because that'd be communism. That would be. The definition of America is for people, rich people, to be able to not have to work so that they can have all the advantages that the American dream has to offer. Who's going to make the bootstraps for the working class to pull themselves up by, if not our betters? Jesus. So that's the first hour of the program. What do you got for the second hour? I got some fun for the second hour. But chime right in, 877-443-2366. 877-443-2366, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I can really quite compare to my island in the sea. A personal utopia, a place to run to, where I can hide away, where I can truly reign supreme, somewhere fresh and clean, where a man can dream. Somewhere hot, I'm king, like every man should be. I'm king, king of somewhere hot, with the music in my soul, makes me start to lose control, and I'll melt right on. And dance the night away, just like the locals do.
million miles from Robin Leach. Happy is just a beach, so far out of reach. I'm king, king of somewhere hot. I'm king, like every man should be. I'm king, king of somewhere hot, with the music in my soul makes me start to lose control. And I'll melt right on the spot. I'm the king of somewhere hot. King of somewhere hot.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, that song choice, partially inspired by the fact that we are broadcasting live tonight from the Head On Radio Network sauna studio. Air conditioner froze up. It's a little toasty here with our southern exposure. But look, we kind of are a southern exposure. Not going to get this kind of liberal talk anywhere else. Our buddy David in Tennessee, speaking of southern exposures, our buddy David in Tennessee says Paris, Gussie the third or fourth or whatever he is, these folks are professional receivers. The family wealth, the public adulation, the nightmares they create, not so much. They just moved to Paraguay and they've a gala to plan. Yeah, I know. Pal Cindy in Washington says, I was thinking about those Republican Bush voters and how they always brag about working hard, like they're the only people in the nation who work hard, and how they don't want to help anyone with their money. Well, how is it that they insist on being led around by the nose by a pack of ne'er-do-well retarded rich kids who never worked at all? How can they worship people who never worked and all they do is steal? Well, the answer to that question, Cindy, to be cynically honest, is to note the fact that these people worship those people because these people want to be those people. They think that if their luck just turns, or if that, it's a classic application of Field's three laws. You can't cheat an honest man, never give a sucker an even break, and don't smarten up a chump. And I've gone into this before, but you can't cheat an honest man is one of the most elegant philosophical statements, I think, that was ever made in the English language. You can't cheat an honest person because an honest person never expects to get value without exchanging some level of value. But these repiglickins, these free marketeers, think that if they're just in the right place at the right time, that it's all going to happen for them, and then they can finally look at their next-door neighbors and the people and the boss and look at them and just tell them to piss off. I'm rich and screw you. It's, you know, you could almost call it, it's like lottery syndrome. As you know, some of us, myself included, play our little lottery numbers every week in the hopes that maybe one will hit. Gosh, a mighty hot lotto's up to $1.15 million, and mercy sakes, the Powerball's up to 33. If you take the cash payout, it only pays you about $16.5 million. And how are you supposed to get by on that? But it is, it's lottery thinking. Because these people can't think past what they would do, because at the core of it, they recognize that they are probably in a level of indentured servitude, these right-wingers who like to be led around by the nose, as Cindy says. They're in a level of indentured servitude that some of us can't comprehend. Me, I'm poor as a church mouse. But I don't get calls from the credit card company, and we don't get calls from bill collectors. Oh, we do occasionally pick up the phone and we're told that we've won a fabulous vacation to Orlando, Florida. But you can just hang up on those. But these repiglickins who are just waiting for their chance, you know, I could be a contender. And then I could scheme and scrounge and yeah. And maybe I could have a $55 million jet like my hero Rush someday. Yay! These are the biggest indentured servants of all. And these are the ones that their betters laugh at all the harder. Can't laugh at me. I know that the game is rigged. I know that the dice are loaded. As Leonard Cohen says, I know that the good guys lost. You see. And one of those happy little emails to share with you. A little backstory on this. A few weeks ago I was talking about having utterly destroyed, carbonized, if you ossified even, a pot of homemade potato soup, because this, it will scorch and it sucks when it does. But our buddy David wrote in from South Carolina and asked me for the recipe because he said his daughter loves it and he loves a good potato soup, and how did I do it? So I put the recipe into an email and sent it along. And just a minute ago, I got an email during the break from David who said, the subject line on the email was another potato soup update. He said, Bob, this potato soup is a huge hit. He said, you've helped me make some deserving residents of the nursing home smile. They really love homemade food after what they endure and what passes for food at the home. The immediate family loves it too. Thanks again. Nothing to thank me for. But I tell you what, I owe you one, David. I owe you big time. Because emails like that make tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow a hell of a lot more worthwhile. Something as innocuous as me emailing a recipe and he's making folks in a nursing home smile with it? I'm not poor as a church mouse. I'm filthy rich. I'm richer than Rush Limbaugh will ever dream of being, him walking around his 24,000 square foot mansion inhabited only by him and a cat, and the cat being the better human being of the two occupants. I am rich beyond my wildest expectations because of you guys. And that just blew me away. It did. So I thank you. Thank you for making making tomorrow and the next day a lot better. Thank you. So we've had John McCain, the geography lessons. Emailer chimed in to note that maybe he can go to a meeting in Constantinople. And my friends, I have been severely distressed by Turkey's attitude toward the Byzantine Empire. Oh, Senator McCain, that sort of went down in the 15th century. 15th century, 20th century, it's all the same to me. So that's where we started. It is not where we finish. It goes on and on and on. We've got a singing Lieberman singing about whether or not he'll lose his position in the next Congress in January. Bless his heart, Bob Greenwald and others from Brave New Films delivered copies of a petition with 43,000 signatures on it to Democratic senators, and those signatures represented assent to a petition that demanded that the Democratic majority, strip Joe Lieberman of his committee chairmanship. So, of course, Senator Genocidal Joe shows up on NPR. What does he do? I'm not sure if this guy's worse, if Senator Lieberman is worse or better than the right-wing freak in Florida. You'll have to judge.
Robert Greenwald's production company, Brave New Films, made the video. He says the point is to pressure Senate Democrats with a petition that now has more than 48,000 signatures.
And given that we've actively and aggressively attacking the candidate for presidency of his party, it seems pretty clear he should not be given any of the perks that come with being a member of the Democratic Party.
I'm not thinking about tomorrow.
Crooning in his Senate office, Lieberman says he honestly does not care about the drive to remove his chairmanship.
That decision is up to my colleagues.
Yeah, he doesn't care. Sorry about the crappy audio. Let's see. Dear Leader says he has finally heard about the $4 a gallon gas. Yeah. By the way, gas dropped what? Crude oil dropped $10 a barrel today in trading on the market. But don't worry, you don't get to see any of that. I give it what, 2 days before either George starts talking about bombing Iran again, or Ahmadinejad starts talking about death to Jews, or an end to the Zionist state, and Israel gets all nervous and starts putting airplanes in the air and buzzing them around and wasting fuel and stuff. And don't worry, the oil market will pick that $10 right back up. Right, suckers? Right. It will. But that's okay, because John McCain knows how to win a war. I wonder if he knows how to win a war with Iran. I'm sure he thinks he does. I mentioned the Afghan base attack from last weekend. By the way, just in case you didn't know, and isn't it funny how this all turns out? The Afghan warlords who are were our buddies, and therefore the CIA gave them a whole lot of weapons? Well, they're our enemies now. No, really. They've turned on us. A report in U.S. News and World Report, not exactly noteworthy for its liberalism, points out, amid a well-coordinated assassination attempt on Afghan President Hamid Karzai and large-scale bombings last week in the capitals of both Afghanistan and Pakistan, U.S. forces are keenly aware, and this is some beautifully understated writing, are keenly aware that they are facing an increasingly complex enemy here. No, really? You think? What U.S. military officials now call a syndicate. Gotta keep tormenting the language. What U.S. military officials now call a syndicate composed not only of Taliban fighters but also powerful warlords who were once on the payroll of the Central Intelligence Agency. A senior U.S. military official speaking on condition of anonymity said, you could almost describe the insurgency as having two branches. It's the Taliban in the south and a rainbow coalition in the east. A rainbow coalition. Is there no getting away from it? Yeah, Jesse Jackson's running. Oh. That's a rainbow coalition in the east. Golly, Ned. But Senator Obama and Senator McCain, in one scenario or another, continue to persist in the notion that we can win in Afghanistan. We can win in Afghanistan. Wonder who we're going to win in Afghanistan with. Who are we going to, if the McCain-Churian candidate gets elected, who are we going to win in Iran with? That question may partially be answered by an Eric Stoner piece that I found at Common Dreams and that was sent to me. Headline, Outsourcing the Iraq War, Mercenary Recruiters Turn to Latin America. In October, Eric Prince, the 39-year-old CEO of Blackwater Worldwide, a leading private security company operating in Iraq, went into damage control mode, Eric Stoner writes. Blackwater employees in Baghdad's Nisour Square had killed 17 Iraqi civilians the previous month, causing an uproar and the suspension of official diplomatic convoys throughout the country for 4 days. Making the rounds with the media and testifying before Congress, Eric Prince repeatedly said that his employees are not mercenaries, as critics contend, citing the definition of a mercenary as a professional soldier working for a foreign government. Prince told the House Oversight Committee that, in contrast, Blackwater's employees are Americans working for America, protecting Americans. Just kind of drives me a little bit crazy, because that means they are mercenaries, because a professional soldier working for a foreign government. Are we native to Iraq? No. Therefore, if the Blackwater mercenaries are working for the American government and we're in Iraq, that would mean that they're mercenaries because they are foreign, they're professional soldiers working for a foreign government, to wit, ours. But here's the punchline that Eric Stoner writes. It's a great article, Common Dreams, commondreams.org. This statement would come as a surprise and a slap in the face to the thousands of Latin Americans and the others from outside the United States, whom Blackwater has hired to fill its contracts in Iraq since the war began. There's this Blackwater affiliate. It was formed in 2004, 4 years ago. It was formed in Barbados so as to avoid paying patriotic American taxes. It's called Greystone Limited. You may have heard of them. They've recruited Iraqi security guards from Chile, you know, old Pinochet enforcers, Colombia, where they have right-wing death squads who murder people in the still of the night and torture their wives and children because they want to stand, these people want to actually stand up and be treated like human beings for the back-breaking labor that they do. Ecuador, yeah, Ecuador's got its own little right-wing problems, or has had, they're trying to cure them. Peru, Yep, same. I seem to recall some right-wingers being supported by us in Peru till they were thrown out. El Salvador? Yeah, I got a real vivid memory of El Salvador, don't you? Seems to have something to do with Ronnie Reagan and something that was run by John Negroponte that were colloquially referred to as death squads. Right-wing death squads. Honduras? Different verse, same as the first. Panama? Yeah. Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, El Salvador, Honduras, and Panama. Eric Stoner also notes that not only does Blackwater do this, other companies that do the same sort of thing that Blackwater does also hire from around the world. Where around the world? Let's see. The estimate is that there are citizens from 30 countries employed as security contractors, otherwise known as mercenaries, in Iraq. Let's see. You can find ex-soldiers from the Balkans, Fiji, Nepal, the Philippines, old apartheid knee breakers and necklace givers from South Africa, and genocidalists from Uganda. But Latin America, because we did such a lovely, lovely job of fomenting right-wing fascism there for a time, is a particularly fertile recruiting ground for these mercenary countries. The article cites Adam Isaacson, who's director of programs at the Center for International Policy. And he says, in what other region of the world are you going to find reasonably westernized people with military experience, in some cases with combat experience, who will work for low wages, who speak a language that a lot of our own military personnel speak? What? What? You mean to tell me that the American military speaks illegal alien? Like what G. Gordon Liddy was talking about? What? Yes. Yes, because, Adam Isaacson notes that the United States Army is about a quarter Latino and that Latin America accounts for about 40% of U.S. military training programs worldwide. It's their natural ground, he says, to find people with military experience for whom $1,000 a month is a lot of money. School of the Americas, anyone? Remember the School of the Americas? Remember what we do at the School of the Americas? Why, yes, we train soldiers and officers from right-wing Latin American countries in techniques they can use when they go home and put things like jumper cables on the genitals of their citizens in order to extract information from them. Yes, that's School of the Americas. Paid for, patriotic music here, please, by you, yes, and me. Out, damn it, spot. Nope, blood's still on my hands. Sorry, can't do a damn thing about it. Fascinating article, if you get time to get around to it. Outsourcing the Iraq War, mercenary recruiters turn to Latin America. And what bargains we get. Because Americans won't, you've heard the stories of the jobs that pay $100,000, $120,000 a year. But no, not to the Hispanics and the Latinos. $1,000 a year? Yeah. More than 1,000 applicants responded to an ad in the Chilean paper El Mercurio looking for former military officers to work abroad. 1,000 people responded. Blackwater selected of that group 77 commandos and sent them to Iraq at $3,000 a month. And then they started cutting the pay. Bear in mind, as I noted, as does the article, that U.S. or British special forces can be paid as much as $1,000 a day, not a year, Not a month. A day in Iraq. But it is in the nature of right-wing conservatism always to look to enhance the profit and loss statement at the expense of labor, even when labor is consisted of former members of right-wing death squads. Because you may get a pretty good soldier at $1,000 a day from former U.S. and British special forces, but you can get a whole lot more if you just go get you some former graduates of the School of the Americas who happen to be members of South American right-wing dictatorship militaries. I mean, do the math. $1,000 a day versus $1,000 a month. And that, friends and neighbors, is why there are literally thousands and tens of thousands of mercenaries in Iraq, to the point that there are far more mercenaries in Iraq than there are American soldiers. Consider, and I know this might be tough to sort of get your head around, it was tough for me, but consider, if we pulled out every American soldier, sailor, airman, marine, male, female, enlisted, officer, if we pulled every last one of them out of Iraq, tomorrow, Iraq would still be an occupied country. Occupied by mercenaries serving under no flag, occupied by mercenaries serving under no patriotic duty, occupied by mercenaries who don't speak the local language, who don't give a damn about Iraqi national sovereignty, who care only what happens on payday. Let that sink in, because that one, that's a mind-boggler. I don't know that we have ever had a situation like that in this country. In all our histories of war, have we ever had a situation where if we pulled the military out, there were still more soldiers in a country than when we started? I don't think so. And that is just amazing to me. If we pull out every single member of the United States military from Iraq, Iraq yet remains an occupied country. That should give cause for great alarm to anybody, and I know that that is most of you, to anybody with a sense of history about them. That should be blood-curdling. Because sooner or later, since they don't answer to a flag, since they don't answer to a civilian governmental hierarchy, sooner or later, those mercenaries can be turned on us. And since so many of them are non-Americans, they won't give a damn about shooting down somebody in the middle of a street in the United States somewhere. Oh, and by the way, just in case you think that isn't in, that just couldn't happen, you know about Eric Prince, right? The guy who runs Blackwater? Now, call in and tell me to shut up if you want to, because you know all this, and this doesn't need to be mentioned again. Eric Prince is a right-wing fundamentalist. Eric Prince is a millennialist. Eric Prince is an apocalypticist. Eric Prince believes all that business about if we can just get the killing going hard enough that Jesus will be forced into his holy roles to come down in clouds of glory and let all the fundies start killing Jews. Believes all that stuff. Advocates it. Think about it. Think about what happens when a mercenary army comes to America. Gracious, we really haven't had to, even in the Civil War, we haven't had to deal with that kind of thing since George III hired the Hessians. We may have to deal with it in the future, though. Don't reckon we'll be sending the mercenaries to Afghanistan, though, now will we? I mean, I guess Hamid Karzai has some guarding his little noggin that is not sitting too entirely snugly at the top of his neck. What happens? Mercenaries being mercenaries don't just go back to, well, okay, I'm done making $1,000 a day. I guess I'll go get me a job that pays $30,000 a year now. It was fun while it lasted. Mercenaries keep their eye out for the next gig. And what do we do if the next gig is on your street? I'm not trying to stir up any fears or panics. But you cannot look at a mercenary army of, what, 180,000 in Iraq? You cannot look at a mercenary army of that size if you're any kind of a realist and not worry about where they go once they're done there. What, toward the end of next month, it'll be 3 years since Katrina devastated the Gulf Coast. And you and I both know that Blackwater showed up on the streets of New Orleans. This isn't an urban myth. This isn't some sort of paranoid liberal conspiracy theory. They were there. They were wearing their shirts. They were proud to be there. They were disarming the dangerous brown people with guns while the NRA looked on and said, I'll be damned. Who knew they had them? Second Amendment only protects the right of white America to have a gun. Yeah. In light of a military that George Bush has utterly shattered, worse than any battle could have done, what happens when the Repiglicans decide they need some, you know, force? What happens? Where is Blackwater? And this is just the question. Where is Blackwater going once we win in Iraq? See, this is why a word like win is so horribly, horribly ineffective. Because win doesn't mean win. Win at the end of World War I had a fairly narrowly defined definition set. There was another definition set at the end of the Second World War. There was a definition set for win when Napoleon was beaten. When Julius Caesar beat the Gauls, finally, whether he had any business being there or not. Win had a definite definition. We don't have that. We don't have a working, narrowly defined set of definitions for what win means in Afghanistan or Iraq. Because win in Iraq creates more loose ends than it ties up. And win in Afghanistan creates more loose ends than it ties up. And the object of winning a war is to tie up the loose ends. You know, there was some messy business after the First World War. There was a map of Europe to be redefined. Apparently John McCain hasn't heard about it. There were oil rights to be dickered over. There was all kinds of stuff. But they, for right or wrong, good or ill, the loose ends were tied up to one degree or another. Now, the question of that degree ultimately winds up with us in Iraq, but that's probably another diatribe on my part. In this case, however, winning in Iraq creates more questions than it answers. And not just questions like, what does it mean to win? How do you define victory against a so-called enemy that you can neither see, nor find, nor fight in the open battlefield, and for whom no one is available to sign a document of surrender? That's just one of them. And it's almost, that one's almost philosophically, pedantically boring if you take it against the backdrop of real, meaningful questions like, where do the mercenaries go? Again, I reiterate, these people have served no flag. These people have had no supervision. These people have never snapped a salute in the whole time that they've been taken. The only salute they've snapped has been on payday. And it was more in the way of a ha ha and a little finger wave as they cashed the check. Do you expect the mercenaries to just go home? Because I don't. Because I've read the articles, we've talked about them on this program, that say that Blackwater is examining its business model to provide employment services to national corporations, governmental entities, yada, 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 in the United States. I don't think it'll be 10 years before mine sites, mountaintop removal sites in West Virginia, will have a couple of assault rifle-toting Blackwater guards or 10 or 20 walking around them. Oh, no. How long before America's nuclear sites, be they nuclear power plants or weapon sites, how long before, if the Repiglicans, especially, if the Repiglicans get their way, how long before those are guarded by Blackwater mercenaries? Some, in fact, may already be. In fact, we know that they were. Maybe not Blackwater, but yeah, so-called private security contracting firms. Because, see, these guys are convenient. Remember Choice Point? Remember the Atlanta, Georgia-based Choice Point data mining company that got a contract from the United States government, from the Bush administration, to data mine American citizens? To collect data about American citizens? Remember them? Now, bear in mind, there's a federal law that says the United States government can't do that. But thou shalt not does not translate as don't do it at all to a repiglicking. It translates as thou shalt not, but somebody else shalt, in the private sector. Yay, private sector, hurrah! It's private sector man and trickle-down boy to the rescue! The same thing applies to Blackwater. Posse Comitatus says that, you know, you can't use the American military on American soil for purposes of law enforcement, in a nutshell. But as you and I all know, and as I recall from the wonderful conversation we had a few weeks back about the Supreme Court and the way that right-wingers look at law, Posse Comitatus doesn't mean what we think Posse Comitatus means. You and I look at Posse Comitatus, and we think that Posse Comitatus means that you can't use the American military for law enforcement purposes on American soil. And we think that, you know, it's like the bumpers, you know, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. You know, the Constitution says it, I agree with the Constitution, that settles it. But no, not to a right-winger, not to a Republican. Oh, no! To them, it means, well, Posse Comitatus says we can't use the military, but there's nothing in Posse Comitatus that says we can't contract it out! You should give the Common Dreams article a good read and think about it. let it percolate a little bit, because you just might not like the conclusions that you reach. You might not like it at all. And we've got a million other things to get into tonight. Your phone calls are, of course, welcome. You know that. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to bob@headonradio.com. They're all welcome. I love reading your emails on the air, sharing your thoughts. Another one, by the way, from yesterday evening. William says, here's a photo I'd like to see. A jet on an airstrip with the entire Bush crime family, past and present, boarding for a trip to Iraq, and then out of the distance walks McCain, Top Gun, as he leaps into the cockpit with the statement, my friends, I'm driving, my friends. Buckle up, my friends. Full throttle lift off, my friends. While the for-profit media, the MSM, break out their cameras to film the event, the fire hoses set on full pressure wash all and every hairstyled talking head freak with all their equipment right out into the streets, right where they belong, then repeat the process in the Capitol and the White House. Now there's a clean slate. There's some change we can hope for. Thanks, William. Yeah. My friends, I love that image. I'm piloting this aircraft. Yeah, I've crashed 5 already, so I think I've had my limit. You're perfectly safe now. I've got this thing down pat, as long as I don't have to use the ejector seat button. I'm still no good at that. Astonishing. Now, just, okay. Since we're talking about working people, you know, after all, that's what Blackwater employees are. They're just working folks. I got this email in, and it's one of those that sort of makes your stomach go a little bit sour. You know how those people working 3 jobs are uniquely American, according to Dear Leader? This is one of those stories. Here's a story. It came from our buddy David. South Carolina David. We got David in Maine, David in South Carolina, David in Tennessee. There may be more Davids, but that's our holy trinity of Davidness. Here's a local story about a 70-year-old garbage man. And people around here, I'm talking about South Carolina, don't see much wrong with this picture. I have a feeling you will. Comes from something called the Morning News. And that's, I guess, the Morning News of Florence, South Carolina. You can almost hear Charles Kuralt's voice, can't you? Jerome Sonny McCall was working the trim saw at a sawmill in Montclair section of Darlington County 17 years ago, when the Sunoco-owned facility closed. So what we have here is a story. By the way, I really liked Charles Kuralt. What we have here is a story about a guy who gave his life and his working life to a facility that was owned by Sunoco. Sunoco being an oil company. He'd worked there he was working there 17 years ago when the facility just shut down and he was out of work. He was 59 at the time, Jerome Sonny McCall. McCall, 59 at the time, was caught between the proverbial rock and a hard place. He needed to work, but the job market wasn't ripe for people his age who operated trim saws. Oh, this is just charming. So he's 59 years old. He's desperate for work. He should have been, under the best of circumstances, 6 years, maybe just three from retirement. No. But McCall managed to get on with the Darlington City Sanitation Department, a good 8-mile haul from his house in Montclair. He said he relies on his wife to drive him to town and back. Today, McCall is a familiar sight around Darlington Public Square. He pulls a trash cart to pick up paper and other refuse. He wears out about a pair of shoes, which the city buys for him, see? Wears out about a pair of shoes a year. He's walked the streets long enough to know which side the shade is going to be on. Mondays are the worst days because of the weekends. He said he used to pick up many beer cans, but, quote, I don't think people drink that much beer anymore. It's mostly paper now. At times he brings his little hoe with him to dig grass out of the bricks. I enjoy seeing all the people the most, he said. They all know me and they're friendly to me. Tammy McKnight of Carolina Drug Store is among those he sees 5 days a week. Tammy says Sonny eats a hot dog every day at 9:30 a.m. And don't ask us because we're supposed to know that he wants that hot dog with just onions and chili along with a Pepsi or a Dr. Pepper. He keeps us straight. McCall also was off 1 week 17 years ago. In 17 years, he was off 1 week and didn't let the drugstore people know. We got on him good about this because we were worried something had happened to him, but he popped in here on a Saturday morning and let us know he'd been on vacation. Sonny's always friendly, talkative, and of good cheer. Sonny don't watch TV or fish or hunt. He's got 5 children, 6 stepchildren. I sit in my chair in the yard and sleep when I don't work. I got chairs all over the yard. I sit in one chair a while and sleep, and then I move to another one, sleep some more. Been a faithful member of the Mount Rona Baptist Church in Society Hill since 1947. He's a deacon there. The Reverend Matthew Robinson is his pastor. He's on the senior choir. He's on the trustee board, 24 years. His favorite Bible verse is Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And he says he wasn't there in the beginning, but he hopes to be around Darlington and Mount Rona for a long time to come, despite his cholesterol and minor blood pressure problems. See, Sonny McCall's 70 years old. Sonny McCall doesn't get to retire. Sonny McCall has 5 children and 6 stepchildren. Sonny McCall doesn't have a pension. Sonny McCall has minor cholesterol and blood pressure problems. But there's nothing in here in this story about Sonny McCall having adequate health care to deal with those problems. He pounds the pavement every day of the week picking up trash. And I'm sure that there are some right-wingers out there, and maybe people who aren't right-wingers. Well, bless him. He's got his life's work and he's staying active. Bless his heart. I'm all for septuagenarians staying active. I hope to be an active septuagenarian. I'd like to be an active octogenarian or maybe an active nonagenarian someday. Maybe I'm talking against the odds. I'm all, like I said, active for being a... I'm all for being an active septuagenarian. But septuagenarians ought to be active in the things after having busted their ass all their life. They ought to be active in things that bring them joy, that bring them a sense of dignified retirement. They ought to be able to be active in things where they don't have to worry about who's going to pay the power bill or how they're going to get through a month and get fed. But that's not the America we live in, is it? A dignified retirement? That's not something that America believes in. Under the Republicans, the pig-lickins, by God, you work till you drop, and you better look like you're grateful for it too, citizen. David asked, am I in an alternate universe? Please don't answer, because I know we are. And I love the way this is a screenshot from the CNN website. It says, CNN money, oil price drops biggest in 17 years. Darlington sanitation worker still going strong at 70. We have listeners to this program from their teens, people in their teens, to people in their 80s. For all I know, in their 90s. And I'm grateful for that. I'm honored by that. I'm inspired by that. But regardless of your age, do you aspire at 70? And this is no reflection on Jerome Sonny McCall. But do you aspire at the age of 70 to be picking up trash around the bar district? I hope you don't. Because it can be, well, it can be deadly. Being poor, used to be you thought, well, you know, you're poor, at least nobody's going to be out there gunning for you. That's not quite how it works. And we know so because of a sentencing that took place in Los Angeles today. Two women, 77-year-old Helen Golay and 75-year-old Olga Ruderschmidt, well, they found something to do with their golden years. And then the California judicial system found something else for them to do. They're each going to serve two consecutive, not concurrent, consecutive life sentences in the California penitentiary system. It stems from their conviction in a conspiracy, a scheme, where they went out and made friends with a couple of homeless guys. And then they took out insurance policies on them. And then they ran them down in dark alleys so it looked like hit-and-run auto accidents. They collected out of this little gig $2.8 million before anybody began to catch on. The sentencing judge did what judges do very well, got all pious and sanctimonious, and said, these unfortunate men were sacrificed on your altar of greed. They killed Paul Vados, who was 73. They did that in 1999. And by 2005, it was time to go to the well again, so they knocked off Kenneth McDavid, who was only 50. And what kind of reflection is this on our country? Because, you know, we do, each and every one of us, we're like... here's a metaphor that
Peter Godbold could enjoy. We're all like the tiny mirrors on a mirror ball, because we all reflect a little bit of who we are and where we come from and the culture that has informed our existence. Not in toto, but in part. And this is a commentary on the American dream. This is also a commentary on the rapaciousness of the insurance industry. Here's a couple of women who show up and want to put insurance policies out on people who are arguably strangers. And because the key is getting the sale, after all, as Calvin Coolidge reminded us, the business of America is business. And he was, of course, a Republican. Got to get the sale. So you sell the term life policy, no questions asked, and because all life insurance is a gamble. And then one day, it turns out that one of them's been run over in an alley. And the documents are sent to the insurance company. And the insurance company acts in what it calls good faith and writes the check. And all is right with the world. The judge noted that the men, these homeless men, needed three things. I guess this falls in with Maslow's hierarchy of need. They needed food, they needed water, and they needed shelter. And they were led to believe that these two women were going to provide them some portion or all three. Instead, they were insured, and when a sufficient period of time had passed, they were killed. They were sacrificed. No, Judge Wesley, not on these women's altar of greed. They were sacrificed on this nation's altar of greed. And frankly, this isn't that much different than what Walmart used to do before they got caught and busted for it. Walmart would take out term life insurance policies on workers, you know, their associates. And it was, it was a business-related cost, so the cost of the insurance policy was written off on Walmart's taxes. So it was like free money. And then somebody at Walmart corporate headquarters there in Bentonville, Arkansas, had the job of scanning the obituaries every day. And when they saw that one of their insured former associates had gone on to their reward, Walmart would file the claim on the policy that they had taken out that they never told anybody they had taken out in the first place and collect the insurance proceeds. And insurance proceeds are also tax-free. They're not deemed income. They're not taxable. So you got a non-taxable event on the front end and a non-taxable event on the back end, and it all comes, and you come out with a net gain. You know, say you had insured them for $100,000 or $1 million. $1 million term life policies are like sneezing for a company like Walmart. And there's the policy that says the John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt is insured for $500,000 by Great Old Line Insurance Company of America, and that the beneficiary is Walmart Corporation, and Great Old Line Insurance Company of America never asks a second question. They do ask the first question. Did they pay all the premiums? Yep. Cool. Sell it. Whoever the insurance salesman was on it, if Walmart didn't have a captive salesman working inside the company in the first place, must have made some tasty little commissions on the sales. And it's great all the way around. Unless, of course, you happen to be the victim. Now, you'll probably hear about this story on the for-profit media. Nancy Grace, if she hasn't already, will probably have a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and kittens with crocheted tails. And they'll talk about what monsters these women are. And you know what? They are. They're monsters. At 77 and 75, let's see, 2005, so they were 74 and 71 on their last murder. They were in their 60s with their first murder in 1999. 1999, they were 68 and 74, or 68 and 64. And they're monsters. But they are monsters because we have a monstrous system that enables monstrosity. Maybe they're not, would you even call them monsters? A monster goes out and runs over the homeless guy in the alley for sport. But these two ladies did it for business. These two ladies did it for profit. Holy profit. Every year, millions of pilgrims go to Mecca because of the command of the Holy Prophet, Prophet. In America, septuagenarian ladies knock off homeless guys for Holy Prophet, Prophet. You tell me who's more dangerous. Now, I got a pretty good answer as far as I'm concerned. So that's hour two. What will hour three be like? Well, for me, I got a little update for you on the status of, the Appalachian Regional Commission and all the good that it's going to do to bring prosperity to this region of America. I think you'll be moved. You'll be excited. Not. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. You ever use the PayPal button to contribute to keeping The Horn on the air at headonradionetwork.com? If you haven't, I encourage you to do so.
Don't let everything was. Oh, no, I don't know why. Assassins, cons, and rapists might as well die. When you come on, come on, thank you, don't be afraid. Watch the sun go down. Don't be cold, don't generate. There's no reason why.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Hey, what do you say we spend this hour going to the environment? We've done war. We've done repiglic and stupidity. How about a little something along the environmental train of thought? Is that okay with you? Now, of course, it could also be your phone calls. But I was thinking, yeah, for the next 50 or so minutes, we'll do some environmental stuff. Unless there's something you want to talk about. And let's start with, you know, that sometimes it's hard to categorize what we're going to do on this program because there's so much overlap. You could say that we're doing the environmental thing, but then you'd have to also deal with the fact that we're also it's also one of those lying gaggle of right-wing thugs things, too. Because when it comes to raping the environment, then, you know, by the environment, I mean the place where we live, all of us, wherever you are, then it almost goes without saying that the rape is going to be performed by, again, followers of Holy Prophet, the Repiglican Party. Now, John Boner is getting ready to lead a tour group up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. He's going to do it in hopes of convincing the world that 6 weeks' worth of oil is worth destroying one of the last pristine wildernesses in America. Yeah, that's a good idea, John. You gonna cry? No, you're gonna go on Chicken Noodle News. And you're gonna tell everybody what you expect to see.
A delegation of House Republicans will leave on Friday for a trip to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge
Wolf
in Alaska,
Blitzer,
also known as ANWR. They're drilling for answers to help break America's dependence on imported foreign oil. Let's discuss this with the leader of that delegation. Congressman John Boehner is the House Minority Leader, the top Republican in the House of Representatives. He's joining us now from Capitol Hill. Mr. Leader, thanks very much for coming in.
Afternoon, Wolf.
You know you disagree with the...
Hey, nice piece of framing there, Wolf, Mr. Leader. Who knew the Republicans were out of power? Who knew that they were in the minority? Why, that's Mr. Leader! How about good afternoon, Congressman Boehner? No, that's not nearly obsequious enough for Wolf Blitzer.
Putative, the incoming leader of the Republican Party, when it comes to drilling in Alaska. Here's what John McCain said recently about his opposition to drilling in Alaska because of the pristine environment and all of that. Listen to what he says.
Oh, what a frame job! Oh, that's beautiful, Wolf! Of its sort, that is some of the most gorgeous putrid art that I have lately seen. Why, do you know that, everybody? You got that now? John McCain is an environmentalist who wants to save ANWR. And he just snuck it right in there, like the way that the shiv, when properly sharpened, can go right between the ribs and into the lungs so that you're long stabbed and on your way to shuffling off this mortal coil before you ever know that you've been attacked. Yeah, just like that. Sorry for the grisly images. I got an email about my use of some of the images that I use, and I guess it rubs some people the wrong way. And I don't mean to. It's an attempt to pull some of the sterility and the gobbledygookiness out of the language. So I don't mean to put people off, and I apologize. But really, when you kill our ability to live where we live, and again, let me reiterate, we're all downstream from everything these evil sons of bitches are doing, self-made ones. When you do that, you're not killing snail darters. You're not killing spotted owls. You're killing people. And all these rat-to-laugh repiglickins don't seem to comprehend that. They can't see the forest for the trees, or better yet, they can't see the trees from the money that they think is growing on them, or under them. So, you know, back to John Boehner. But that was good, Wolf. That was really good. That was restaurant quality.
It's called the Arctic Natural Wildlife Refuge for a reason. It's a refuge.
All right, why do you think...
It's not called the Arctic Natural Wildlife Refuge, Senator 894 out of 899.
That's what we'll call him. Never mind. If George W. Bush can be W, we can just, and he wanted to be called 43 and call his daddy 41. Why, we'll just call the McCain-Turian candidate, we'll just call him 894. There's a frame that might stick. Senator 894. 894. 894.
What's that mean?
Because, see, that's one of those conversation door openers. I can't bring myself to vote for old 894. I'm voting for the smart guy. I'm voting for Obama. Why you call him 894?
Well, because in his class at Annapolis, there were 899 midshipmen. And of those 899 midshipmen, when they graduated, he was number 894, and it wasn't because of alphabetizations. He had the fifth worst grades in his graduating class at Annapolis. See how the door just goes and opens up for you? Can you use that in conversation? I'm going to use it in conversation. Instead of saying McCain, call him 894. I'm going to call him 894. I'm going to have to try that out real soon. Yeah, I'm going to vote for Obama. I can't vote for 894.
Because if you call him 894, people, it's going to speak to their native curiosity, and they can't help it. Why are you calling him 894? Because he's so damn dumb. He was 894th out of 899 in his class. That's why I'm calling him 894. Geez, even George W. Bush didn't graduate that low at Yale. Oh, the opportunities that presents. So, 894, it's not the Arctic Natural Wildlife Refuge, it's the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, you stupid SOB, self-made. We own it. It belongs to the people. You know, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. And the more perfect union includes a few places that the oil companies aren't allowed to destroy. But, okay, let's assume for a minute that you're not on board with drilling in Anwar. You're damn sure on board with drilling off of California. Goodbye, playful little sea otters that make us feel good when we see you cracking the oysters on your backs and looking like you actually enjoy your existence. Goodbye, seals. Goodbye, walruses. Goodbye, schools of really big, beautiful fish. Goodbye! Goodbye, Catalina Island!
Oh, no, Muffy and I were going to take the tour boat out today to the Catalina tar pits. I thought those were the, I thought those were the La Brea tar pits. Well, they were, but now we've got some new ones on Catalina Island after the big spill, don't you know? It's quite fascinating watching the little animals frolic about as they try to get the greasy crude oil off of their feathers and fins and so forth. It's delightful.
I think McCain is wrong.
I just think that House Republicans and myself, we're for all of the above. We need more conservation. We need more biofuels. We need to speed the development of alternative sources of energy.
I got to remind me, I got something on all of this here in a little bit, and it don't come from no pig licking. Now, we need all of the above. We want cake, and we want to eat the cake, but we don't want any of the cake to go away from the plate. See, that's leadership repiglicking style. And see, we've already tried this and it worked really well. Hey, do you remember the first Thanksgiving when George Bush went over to the Middle East? Remember that first trip he made? Yeah, when he brought the plastic turkey to the troops? We had our turkey and we ate it too. See how it works? We can do the same thing with the environment because we're repiglickins and we're problem solvers.
But we need more nuclear electricity produced in our country, and we need to...
You know, you can watch the wildlife and enjoy them a hell of a lot more when they're glowing in the dark. That opens up whole tourist opportunities for nighttime animal spotting, when the animals that you spot are just green.
Produce a more American-made energy. And while John McCain and I may disagree on one part of that American-made energy, John McCain believes we ought to drill on the outer continental shelf. That we ought to be drilling in the Intermountain West, where Barack Obama and most Democrats on Capitol Hill don't want to drill anywhere to produce more American-made energy. And so while we may disagree on a piece of it, John McCain and I agree on much more than what we disagree.
All right, Congressman, have a safe trip to Alaska. We'll talk to you when you get back.
I'll be looking for all that wildlife up there, Wolf.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
I'll be looking for all that wildlife up there. Because it's a vast and barren wasteland. Yeah, this is just charming. Back up just a little bit.
A House Republican.
A little further.
His opposition to drilling in Alaska because of the pristine environment and all of that. Listen to what he says.
How many millions of them? I'm sorry. I don't mean to just break this up and drive you crazy. You know, play the clip, Bob. Stop this. The environment and all that stuff. How many millions of dollars a year do you get for using brilliant language like the environment and all that stuff on a cable channel that holds itself out as purportedly the nation's greatest gatherer of news? I'm not holding myself out as the guy who ought to be doing it, because obviously I know. I don't know where this stutter came from. I didn't use to stutter till I started getting all flustered, and then... The environment and all that stuff. The environment and stuff. You know, stuff like the environment. Stuff. But wait.
It's called the Arctic Natural Wildlife Refuge for a reason. It's a refuge.
All right, why do you think McCain is wrong?
I just think that House Republicans and myself, we're for all of the above. We need more conservation. We need more biofuels. We need to speed the development of alternative sources of energy. But we need more nuclear electricity produced in our country. And we need to produce a more American-made energy. And while John McCain and I may disagree on one part of that American-made energy, John McCain believes we ought to drill on the Outer Continental Shelf, that we ought to be drilling in the Intermountain West, where Barack Obama and most Democrats on Capitol Hill don't want to drill anywhere to produce more American-made energy. And so while we may disagree on a piece of it, John McCain and I agree on much more than what we disagree.
All right, Congressman, have a safe trip to Alaska. We'll talk to you when you get back.
I'll be looking for all that wildlife up there, Wolf.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
All because he goes around and he says of the trip, we're going to look at this barren Arctic desert where I'm hoping to see some wildlife, but I understand there's none there. Of course, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says that the Anwar is renowned for its wildlife. It says that it's inhabited by 45 species of land and marine mammals, 36 species of fish, 180 species of birds. Now, you know, they've even got pictures. Really. You can go to fws.gov/refuges/profiles, or just go to fws.gov and surf from there. It's not like you're Repiglickens and right-wingers and don't know how to use the inner tubes yet, like John McCain. There's a lot of wildlife. Well, dang, they said there's going to be wildlife. There wasn't any elephants. I didn't see no elephants. Where was the giraffes? Where was all the buffaloes and the reindeer herds? I mean, who cares if it's a couple of stinking wolves? And remember, they've told us already that the caribou go and get all warm and toasty, cozy and up to the pipeline there. Jesus. Makes me sick. Nope, no wildlife in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's why it's a National Wildlife Refuge. Could we change the name and make John Boner happy and call it the Arctic National Wilderness Area? Because it is a wilderness area. Dude, I despise these people. I do. There's no wildlife there. I was up there hunting, and I had to go 3-4 days before I could shoot me a spotted owl. Oh, God. God! But that's okay. Don't get all burned up at the Repiglickens, or don't get burned up at the Repiglickens and think that that's all the problem there is. Oh no, no no. Mm-mm. This actually came to me as a proudly offered press release today. My congressman. Headline. Oh, those of you in the West Virginia portion of the audience are just going to love this. Or in the Appalachians, for that matter. In any state where the Appalachian Regional Commission exists, you're going to love this. And those of you outside who actually give a damn what happens here, you're going to love this too. Headline, Ray Hall backs coal to liquids provision in Appalachian Regional Commission reauthorization. Boosts American-made energy for America. Didn't I just hear that same phrase a minute ago? I did. I just know I did. I heard that repig-licking piece of garbage, John Boner, hustling American-made energy for America. which sounds nice. Kind of like the way Americans for Responsible Healthcare Choices sounds nice until you realize that it's an AstroTurf organization that's fronted by people who hate healthcare. Or Americans for Fair Labor Practices until you find out that it's a front group that's sponsored by the United States Chamber of Commerce and Walmart. That's not the real name of the group, but we had it last night. You know what I'm talking about if you're a regular to the show. American-made energy for America. That means that we're going to drill for it off the continent or on the outer continental shelf. Boy, there's another nice frame. That's the outer continental shelf. I mean, it's way the hell out there. Not like the oil could ever get here. I mean, the Chinese are drilling for oil in Cuba. We cannot have an oil drilling gap. You think I'm kidding. Dateline, Washington, D.C. U.S. Representative Nick J. Rahal, DWV, Tuesday helped to pass legislation in the House to extend and enhance the program's enhance the programs of the Appalachian Regional Commission, including a new program. Oh, it's a new one. It's new! 20% more! Free! The Economic and Energy Development Initiative that would boost, okay, well, that sounds good so far. An Economic and Energy Development Initiative. Well, we certainly need economic development here in Appalachian. Energy development, that sounds good. That might dovetail nicely with coalriverwind.org, the attempt to put windmills on top of the 10 square miles of mountain that NASA Energy can't wait to blow up. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's an energy development initiative. That would develop energy to power 150,000 homes indefinitely. Wow. So the Appalachian Regional Commission has a new program, the Economic and Energy Development Initiative. This sounds great.
Well, don't get your hopes up.
That's right, I'm a nattering nabob of negativity tonight. The Economic and Energy Development Initiative would boost development of an environmentally advanced coal-to-liquids industry in West Virginia and throughout the region. In fact, with enough federal grants and enough of your taxpayer dollars, we can make sure that every time you turn on your water tap, you can get a nice, lovely glass of sludge and filth in your water. Yeah, you can, because, well, there's this other thing out there that I've sort of hung on to. A little study that came out. And it's got one of those really scintillating scientific-sounding sort of titles, you know, that kind of just leap right off the doctor's office magazine shelf at you. Preliminary toxicological analysis of the effect of coal slurry impoundment water on human liver cells. Oh, I hate liver. Let's say it slowly and let it sink in. This is the work of Joseph E. Bunnell. Preliminary toxicological analysis of the effect of coal slurry impoundment water on human liver cells. This is just going to take a minute. I'll try not to get too lost in all the technology that I don't understand. You know, I bet our buddy Patrick up in Massachusetts could help me understand this. I may have to email this to him. But the background experiment language says this. Coal is usually washed with water. See, washed is in quotes the way that right-wing goober at the beginning of the show put United States of America in quotes. Coal is usually washed with water and a variety of chemicals to reduce its content of sulfur and mineral matter. The washings, or coal slurry, derived from this process is a viscous black liquid containing fine particles of
coal, mineral matter, and other dissolved and particulate substances. Coal slurry may be stored in impoundments or in abandoned underground mines. Remember, friends and neighbors, this is science. This isn't some prattling madman in the mountains. This is science. You know, theory, hypothesis, and scientific method, all that. Yeah. Human health and environmental effects potentially resulting from leakage of chemical substances from coal slurry into drinking water supplies or aquatic ecosystems have not been systematically examined. Impoundments, and by impoundments he means sludge seas, sludge lakes. Impoundments are semi-permeable. That means some stuff can get through. Impoundments are semi-permeable, presenting the possibility that inorganic and organic substances, some of which may be toxic, may contaminate ground or surface water. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, part of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has concluded, this is important, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, part of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has concluded that well water in Mingo County, West Virginia, constitutes a public health hazard. Residents of the Williamson area, Mingo County, especially children, have been subjected to chronic exposure to certain inorganic compounds from their private wells. These elements may have been mobilized to their well water from nearby coal extraction activities. Okay, time out. I feel compelled to translate some of that into English. These elements may have been mobilized to their well water from nearby coal extraction activities. That means that mountaintop removal jobs and the sludge dams and the seas, the veritable small oceans of toxic goo that sit behind them, may well have leached into the well water. The presence of and exposure to organic compounds, some of which are known genotoxins. Now there's a fun word, isn't it? I don't have a definition right offhand. Unless Lottie in the chat room corrects me, I'm assuming that a genotoxin is so toxic that it gets down, it works on the subcellular genetic level so that if you get it, it can be passed on to your progeny even if they're nowhere near it. Genotoxins, poisoning the genes on the chromosome pairs. The presence of an exposure to organic compounds, some of which are known genotoxins, carcinogens, and teratogens. Okay, going to need help with teratogens. T-E-R-A-T-O-G-E-N-S. That may also be mobilized from mining sites to groundwater. Were not, however, covered under the scope of the ATSDR report. Put on the brakes for a minute. Mr. Joseph E. Bunnell has just told us that because of the ATSDR, which is a report generated by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that those reports generated the conclusion that well water in Mingo County is, not might be, but is a public health hazard. But then Mr. Bunnell goes on and explains to us that there's all kinds of stuff that that report didn't even test for. And the things that haven't been tested for were genotoxins, carcinogens, and teratogens. They haven't been tested for, they haven't been examined. And so we don't know exactly what that is doing to our children, or our old folks, or our middle-agers, or our teenagers, or anybody else. As a first step, Mr. Bunnell says, in examining the potential toxicity of coal slurry impoundment water, I frankly think it's a little unfair to call that stuff water. Because it's water the way that elephants are ant-like. As a first step in examining the potential toxicity of coal slurry impoundment fluid to human liver tissue, and you know, this human liver tissue is a good place to start. The liver is a big filter. A preliminary experiment using slurry impoundment water collected in 2006 from Mingo County, West Virginia, was conducted to determine its effect on HepG2 cells, low passage number cells were maintained and grown, yada, yada, yada. 12 replicates of each slurry concentration were included in the experiment at concentrations of 1%, 5%, and 10%. The outer perimeter of wells was not treated or included in the analysis to minimize variability, yada, yada, yada. And there are citations, and then you start getting into the complicated, guess what? It's worse than we thought. It is worse than we thought. My heroes, all the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, who have been crying in the wilderness for years, trying to inform people that we are actively poisoning our children, our grandchildren, who have no clue what we're doing to them. We're actually, bless their hearts, underestimating what is going on. It is worse than even the worst of anything we had suspected. And now back to the happy news from the Appalachian Regional Commission. The new initiative would enable the Appalachian Regional Commission to make grants, enter into contracts, and give technical assistance for energy initiatives that use biomass, plant materials, to produce alternative liquid fuels. Biomass would be used in combination with coal to create coal-to-liquid fuels with reduced emissions. New, lower fat! It's a lower, reduced fat! Reduced fat crackers and reduced emissions fuel, and it's reduced, but it ain't eliminated. And if you're trying to get either one of them out of your diet or out of your world, and you're still doing it, you're still getting it. Why, it would also support development of projects to capture carbon and store emissions from the generation of coal-based power. Both components are key to coal's future. You'll notice it's talking about coal's future. God almighty, coal is inanimate. It doesn't talk about people's future. It doesn't talk about children's future. Because I just showed you that this kind of crap poisons children. You heard it, children most of all. So we talk about coal's future. But we can't talk about human beings' future because coal's future eliminates human beings' future. God Almighty! Both components are key to coal's future. Ow. Ow. Gallbladder's hurting. I think I blew out my gallbladder. Both components are key to coal's future and to advancing a viable domestic coal-to-liquids industry to provide American-made energy for America. Na 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 na. See, there's some Freudian stuff going on here. Both components are key to coal's future, not people's future, but coal's, and to advancing a viable domestic coal-to-liquids industry. Never mind advancing the human race. Never mind advancing the human future. We've got to provide American-made energy for America. By the way, there won't. No. You half a loaf optimists? You half glass full people? Glass half full people? Well, okay, I mean, there's that, but it's the Economic and Energy Development Initiative, and it's for the Appalachian Regional Commission, and surely to God there's something in there about solar or wind. I mean, we got a lot of sunshine and wind in the mountains. No. No, dadgummit, no. No, there's not a bleeding peep about it in here. Oh, I'm shouting again. I'm sorry. I'm sure many of you get very, very frustrated when I start shouting. It's not necessary. I'm not mad at you. You get it. You understand. We talk about this stuff on the air, and you contribute to keep the horn on the air so we can keep talking about this stuff, because doggone it, nobody else will. You get it. And I'm sitting here yelling at you. I'm sorry. I apologize. This just makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits. Now we've got the Coal River Wind Project. If I'm getting it wrong, somebody straighten me out. Nick, Lorella, anybody. CoalRiverWind.org, right? There's a petition out there that you can sign, any of you, saying you'd like to see the wind project go up on Coal River Mountain instead of the 10 square acres of moonscape and death and destruction and environmental rape and landscape rape and living things rape and all the sludge and slurry fluid that's going to be generated from it, that's going to go into the wells and go into the public water supplies and go into the streams that instead of all that, you'd like to see a wind farm on top of Coal River Mountain. Is there one thin penny inside this American-made energy for America bug spray, the new program in the Appalachian Regional Commission reauthorization? No, there is not one thin cent. Because this is about taking care of, and they said it better, I didn't do this, they did it. This is about taking care of coal's future and advancing a viable domestic coal-to-liquids industry. I've never gone to church with an industry. I've never broken bread with coal. But I know real, live, honest-to-God human beings who are being destroyed by the people who are concerned about coal's future and advancing a coal-to-liquids industry. Damn sure do. Congressman Ray Hall, dadgummit. When are you going to come into the 21st century, my friend? When are you going to understand that hanging on to an outdated, outmoded, filthy energy source only perpetuates the sickness that already permeates this state and this region? When are you going to figure that out? When are you really going to step up and represent the people here, Congressman?
Quit representing the coal companies. Quit trying to use my taxpayer dollars to ensure coal's future instead of working on West Virginians' futures and Appalachian people's futures. It's about time somebody worried about the hillbillies instead of the damn stuff that's under the hillbillies. God!
A provision in this legislation, these are remarks from the floor. A provision in this legislation would enable the ARC to make grants, provide technical assistance, enter into contracts, and otherwise provide for projects that would increase the use of renewable energy, particularly biomass, in the Appalachian region to produce alternative transportation fuels. Ah, see, that's the thing. We haven't figured out how to put a windmill on a car. This is extremely important in helping make a commercial coal-to-liquids industry a reality in this country. When the coal-to-liquids industry becomes a reality in this country, congressmen, then hillbillies will get sicker and sicker and sicker. The use of biomass with coal in the conversion process can sharply cut carbon emissions of coal-to-liquid fuels. A study by Princeton University, non-hillbillies, found that by combining 30% biomass with coal in the conversion process and capturing and sequestering the carbon dioxide, coal-to-liquid fuel can be made cleaner than other conventional liquid fuels in use today. Hooray! Somebody bring me a cake! In other words, like I said, not a thin cent in there for wind or solar. A second provision in the bill would provide support for the development of conventional energy resources such as coal to produce electricity using advanced greenhouse gas reduction technology. Again, we're reducing, we're not eliminating. If, as long as we're reducing and not eliminating, we are perpetuating the problem. Eliminate, 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 eliminate. You know, there's a story about the great environmentalist, perhaps the greatest and first and father of the American environmental movement, Edwin Muir. And Teddy Roosevelt. And Teddy Roosevelt had already earned a reputation as a conservationist, as a lover of nature, establishing the first national parks in the United States. And he got a meeting with Edwin Muir. And Edwin Muir looked at him, if I understand the story correctly, Edwin Muir looked at him and said, "Mr. President, when are you going to stop this childish foolishness of being a conservationist and grow up and become a preservationist? It has to be preserved. And all of this business about reducing and sequestering and anything that allows them to keep using this filthy garbage and keep poisoning people downwind and downstream is nothing but a shameless avoidance of reality." And by the way, all this business about biomass and renewable, and adding biomass to coal and making it thereby the more carbon friendly or whatever. You know what? You know how this all translates? You know what this means? This means that they want to try to start planting switchgrass on mountaintop removal sites. Because for all their talk about what wonderful business locations mountaintop removal sites make, they can't seem to get anybody to go there and make a business on them. Because it's unstable land. So they're going to grow switchgrass on it. Or, I don't know, sugar cane. Shh, don't tell them. Sugarcane won't grow here. Switchgrass might not either. Shh. Hey, we'll plant it all in corn. Shh. I saw some reclaimed land the other day when I was up at Cayford. And it probably doesn't show up from the air real well. Or on the pretty little pictures that Walker Machinery puts out. But you can see the boulders sticking up through the reclamation. You couldn't turn that so-called soil with a plow that was made of solid diamond 9 feet long and 4 feet wide.
You can't grow anything on a mountaintop removal site. It's a dead place. You can't grow anything on the moon either. And the moon and a mountaintop removal site have a hell of a lot in common. They're both dead places. What water was under the ground is gone from the ground because the water table got blown up and the water was used in combination with a bunch of poisonous chemicals to so-called wash the coal and went into a sludge sea, where now it's leaching into the water supply and is noted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as being a public health hazard. I'm doing it again. I am proud to support this bill to get our nation beyond our reliance on foreign fuels and get our people out from the under the heavy hand of big oil. Out of the frying pan and into the fire, as far as I can tell. Out from under the heavy hand of big oil and into the heavy hand of big coal. Well, that's a win-win. See, that's the problem. The sun doesn't have a lobby, and the wind doesn't have an office on K Street. And we, Lord Jesus, we are so very much the poorer for it. Nobody lobbies for the sun, and nobody advocates for the wind. But there's more than enough people out there willing to break their backs to advocate for the destruction of 10 square miles of one of the most beautiful, pristine mountains in southern West Virginia. And to tell me and to tell you that it's good for America. That's right. It's good for America. For other Americans to wage war on their fellow Americans is good for America. It's something like sinking a little gas well out on a flat somewhere. That's dangerous enough. That's destructive enough. 10 square miles of mountain. 10 square miles of mountain that has growing on it ginseng, healing herbs, valuable herbs, ramps, morel mushrooms, yum, deer, turkeys, the vast panoply of life in a semi-temperate, semi-rainforest, unlike any other anywhere on the planet. And all it's good for is killing. But in a way, I guess you could say that it gets its revenge. Because what comes out from under that mountain, the blood those mountains bleed, is poisonous to you and me. It is life-ending to you and me. Left in their natural, pristine state, those mountains will support life, and will support not only life, but life in abundance. Life in joyous abundance. But blow her up, and she pours poison right down our throats. And it ain't like we don't deserve it. It is literally the hand of the dead reaching out to identify her assailant. The problem, however, is that the people who are getting poisoned aren't the people who wanted her dead. The people who wanted her dead live in faraway places like Richmond and St. Louis.
and they call themselves executives, and they communicate with people in New York at Wall Street who tell them that their profit and loss statements would be made ever so much better if Coal River Mountain could just disappear. And another day's service ends at the American Temple of Holy Prophet. And like something out of Central America, like one of the Chakmul sculptures, you and me and everybody downwind and downstream are bent back, our chests thrust up, waiting for corporate America to rip our living, beating, bleeding hearts from our chests. And that's before they even get to the child sacrifice part. Marsh Fork Elementary. Children who breathe coal dust and drink coal filth and whose kidneys burn from the poisons that the masses of the world have been allowed to pump in and tell us to like it because it's good for West Virginia's economy. Provides good-paying jobs to hard-working West Virginians. Bullshit. So that's the program for tonight. I hope you don't mind that last little diatribe there. When I saw that press release come out today, and I compared it against this United States Geological Survey preliminary toxicological analysis, and then I saw the Boehner clip with the same phrase used by my Democratic congressman, I don't know, a lot of fog just sort of rolled away, and a lot of light came in. So, again, my apologies if I was boring or overly harsh, or you felt like you already got it and still I was screaming at you. I apologize. But for good or ill, it's over now. And I want to thank, I want to thank Peter Godbold, our IT professional, who himself is plagued with a terrible, terrible internet service provider, and I assume. Oh, here, let me look in the chat room real quick. Haven't? Nope, no Peter Godbold. So there will be no live Strictly Confidential, and it's driving him as crazy as it's driving you. But I want to thank him for everything that he does. I want to thank John Fox, our chief engineer, our webmaster, for all he does. Because I want to thank our chat room moderators. I want to thank ELO for the work that she does with the gorgeous videos she creates. I want to thank our bloggers, even though the blog is down. They do a hell of a job. News Ninja Jean and News Ninja Susan. Blogger Betsy. I want to thank you for listening in and making this continue to happen, and thank you for it, for sharing your time, and for sharing of what you have to make sure that this programming is out there for the people who may need it, and not even yet know that they do. I want to thank you all, because it all ties in with the issues that we talk about that matter, whether it be the environment, whether it be the abuses of religion in America, whether it be trying to create a political future that is free of the toxicity that that just infuses it now. Those are the things that you do just by listening, by contributing, by telling others about the horn. And it makes you